Good morning, this is Focus 580. It's our telephone talk program. My name is Jack Brighton. Very glad you are listening today. During this first hour of the program, we will take a closer look at the Chief Illiniwek controversy. And our guest for the program is Jay Rosenstein. He is a documentary producer, has produced a number of, as they say, long-form pieces in television documentary, including I believe at least one which has won an Emmy Award, something we talked about in, with him several years ago on Drinking on Campus. No, excuse me, that was the Date Rape program, yes. And he is the producer of a new documentary which will be airing on public television later this spring, entitled In Whose Honor, which takes a look at the Chief Illiniwek controversy and some of the issues that are involved. We will talk about that piece, about the making of it, and some of the issues that it examines during this hour with Jay Rosenstein. If you would like to join us, you can call us around Champaign-Urbana by calling 333-9455. That's 217-333-WILL if you match the letters with the numbers. Also, we have a toll-free line. Good anywhere you're hearing us, around Illinois, Indiana, parts of the other states where our signal travels. That number is 800-222-9455. Again, around Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL, and toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-WILL. Jay Rosenstein, good morning.
Good morning, Jack.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me today.
Okay, first dumb guy question. What led you to do a documentary on this particular issue?
Well, the incentive to do this, I think, happened... it was probably around in 1990 when I went to a talk being given at the Y by a group of Native American students here on campus at that time. And I don't really know why I went to that. I don't remember intending to go there. I just remember suddenly that I was there. I might have just happened to be in the building having lunch or something like that. And at that time, I was a very, very, very big sports fan and had season tickets to all the Illini games, football, basketball, etc. So I'd seen Chief Illiniwek many, many, many times. But I heard a woman speak there that day by the name of Charlene Teeters, who many people in this community probably are familiar with. She came to school here in grad school in 1989, and I heard her tell her story, and I was just absolutely stunned, shocked, had all kinds of reactions to her story. What I got out of that was it was very clear that although people had been talking about this issue for a while, there was so much information that nobody was talking about. There was this whole other story, this whole other side that nobody was mentioning that I thought was of profound importance. And at that time, I sort of registered in the back of my mind, somebody ought to tell this story to the public. At the time, I had no idea it was going to be me because I'd never done anything like this before. But that sort of planted the seed, and it wasn't until 3 years later that I actually... decided I'd take a shot and I'd see if I could do this, and I tried to produce a documentary on it.
Okay, so you saw a whole side of the story that you felt wasn't being addressed. What was it about that story? I mean, what was the information that that you weren't exposed to, that you were there, that really sparked your interest?
Well, clearly the university had done a very, very good job of telling its sort of its side of the story, and I'm sort of generalizing when I say the university, mm-hmm. but what I mean by that is the information about why people liked Chief Illiniwek and what it was intended to do, that was well out there in the media and still is, and there's a lot of reasons for that. We could spend a whole hour talking about how the media and the university and the athletic department and what all their relationships are, but the fact is that Native American people really hadn't gotten a chance to tell their side of the story, and there's a lot of reasons. Some of which are that there are so few Native people here. The state of Illinois in general has a small Native population, but this community here, tiny, tiny, tiny. And again, when I say Native Americans, what I'm talking about are people who are from the culture, who identify themselves culturally as Native Americans, which is very different to me than people who identify themselves as, say, white or other ethnic backgrounds. But then when this controversy comes up, then they come out and say, oh, well, I'm 132nd Cherokee, so now I want to be a spokesperson for the Indian population. What I'm saying is there was very little information about how American Indians felt about this. And in the absence of their voices, it was very easy to perpetuate half-truths, and you hear that a lot when people talk about this. You hear so many people saying, Indians think this, Indians feel this way. But there are so few American Indians getting a chance to really tell their side of the story. So I felt that their side of the story was not being told at all. Mm-hmm. And I was stunned when I found out exactly what their side of the story was. And so that was one of the goals I had in making this piece. Mm-hmm. I wanted to give American Indians a chance to tell their side of the story, to really speak and really get to explain it, because I also don't think that it's something that can be understood in a soundbite or two. Mm-hmm.
The piece does reflect the perspectives of a number of people, including several members of the Board of Trustees of the University of Illinois and Representative Rick Winkle, who you interview mm-hmm. as part of the piece, mm-hmm. Who's very much involved in the issue. But primarily it seems to tell the story, in addition to other things, of Charlene Teeters and mm-hmm. her experience here at the University of Illinois, which I think is very interesting in and of itself, since she was very naive when she came here. She had no idea that there was this tradition. Chief Alinek was part of the sports culture here at the University. Well, not just sports, but the culture of the University of Illinois. And her story is kind of alarming in the sense of the reactions that she got from people mm-hmm. when she started to ask questions.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you should say that she was unaware of the university's tradition. Because the university and the community is so unaware of what these symbols and these things mean traditionally to American Indians. And here we're talking about a tradition that goes back hundreds of years further than the university's decision to use this stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm just pointing that out because, again, that's another side of the issue that doesn't get talked about very much, is that, and Charlene is very eloquent when she explains how much of this stuff is comes from sacred spiritual traditions for traditional American Indians. And again, this is a point that I think a lot of people have trouble understanding, is that not all American Indians worship in the traditional ways. And so there are many American Indians for whom these things perhaps don't have spiritual or religious significance. But anyways, I wanted to point out mm-hmm. that you know, it's funny, this community was not ready for Charlene as much as Charlene wasn't ready for this community.
Yeah. Well, we have a caller to talk with. Why don't we go ahead and include them? And that's line number one in Urbana. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'm really happy to be part of this conversation. I'm an alum who still lives here in Urbana, and I became aware of this controversy fairly early on when Senator Simon took the very brave stance of saying, yeah, this has come to my attention and I think we need to look at it. And he took the anti-chief stand. And I had the same sort of reaction. Oh, gee, I never thought of it that way. Duh, as my 11-year-old would say. And I think for people who came to this university and left the town, perhaps had the same experience that I had, which was, you know, you went to football games and the chief came out and he did his dance and he was at the basketball games. And, you know, it was this little thing. And I think in the 80s when the Indian symbol was adopted, and you go to basketball games now and sometimes you see the tomahawk chop. And it made me very uncomfortable, and I still am very uncomfortable. And I did not take the stand of ending my basketball season ticket holding, because it's one of the few things that my husband and I have continued to do together since we've had children. But I have to get up and leave the stadium and go to the restroom or go get a drink. I can't be in there when these people are watching this college frat kid jump around in dress any more than you know, I could see students mocking someone wearing blackface or and I know there are going to be a lot of comments, you know, saying, oh, you don't understand. And I think, yes, I don't understand. I don't understand their viewpoint of saying we have to continue this great tradition. I think people need to be sensitive and aware, and I don't think it's about political correctness. I don't feel like, you know, my eyes and open them. I think we need to honor minorities. We need to honor things that we don't understand, and then other people understand. And I wanted to get those words in, even though when I wrote a letter to the editor to the newspaper, I got phone calls where people would say things and hang up on my answering machine, and I was stunned, you know, because to me it's a real non-issue. It's okay, we've been doing something that was important to us. It's hurtful to others, and I think it's hateful that people would want to continue that hurt. So I applaud you in your efforts of getting the other side out, and I look forward to seeing the documentary because I haven't had a chance to see it yet.
Well, thank you very much. I think you brought up a lot of important points. I should mention, Jack, you didn't know this, but the piece is going to air July 15th,
okay,
is the date, and I believe it'll be on at 8 p.m. Here in this area. It'll probably be 9 p.m. Central, will be the regular time. So that'll be July 15th. But thank you very much for your call. You know, the other part of my motivation for doing this is sort of something that caller mentioned, which is just getting to a point where you suddenly have your eyes open. And the point of the piece really is to educate people and to let them really see both sides of the issue in a way that they'd never done so before. And a lot of people do see the program and walk away from it feeling that they've really learned something. And that makes me feel good. In fact, In Whose Honor just won an award from the National Education, let me get this right, the National Educational Media Network, which is the largest organization that gives awards for educational videos, and it got the highest award. It got a first prize for that. And so that sort of helps me to sort of verifies that what I'm doing is really working, and that is educating people.
Okay. I hope that gets to the caller's point. Did you want to follow up at all?
No, thanks.
Okay. Thanks very much for your call. It's amazing to me, Jay, the amount of controversy and the volume of the emotion involved in this issue. Mm-hmm. And it just seems, you know, the caller mentioned that she had published a letter to the editor and got some mm-hmm. kind of harassing phone calls mm-hmm. in response to mm-hmm. that. You know, and Charlene Teeters tells in your piece about the kind of harassment that she got. I don't think there's been a divisive issue like this in this community. I don't remember anything involving politics or culture that has sort of stirred up the, you know, the intensity of the feelings that Chief Alinawick has.
Right. It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's interesting that there's that intense of an emotional reaction, and I think that's one of the reasons why POV, which is the program point of view that picked up this piece to air it nationally on PBS, that's one of the things that people who aren't from this community find so compelling about this story. What is it about this that gets such an intense emotional reaction? I can't really explain it. Just as you said, there's been so many other political, other issues in this community, and yet they rarely seem to attract this kind of passion. I don't understand it necessarily either.
We have another call to talk with. Let's go ahead and do that. And that's line number two in Champaign. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. I do not feel like it should be as divisive an issue. In fact, I'm a Bear fan, Chicago Bear fan. So if we want to change it to the Illini Bears, that's great. And neither team is doing that well right now. But I guess I wanted to go back and look at a little bit of the reasoning, maybe, on why all these teams were named for Indian tribes. I mean, we got the Redskins, and we've got the Kansas City Chiefs, and so on. The question comes back from people in the 50s or whenever these teams were named. I think that, I mean, we just asked some basic questions. Were Indians fierce warriors? The answer is yes. When we're a team going against another city's team, do we want to be fierce warriors? Yes. And what icon, what image of attacking the other city's team in a you know, kind of a fun sportsmanlike way do we want? What imagery do we want to call forth? And I don't know that it needs to be thought of in such negative terms. There have been Indian chiefs that have even said, no, we don't think it's that big a deal. We were fierce warriors and fiercer than that team even, you know, and they didn't see a big deal. But we ask, why are these teams named this way? Well, that's why. I don't know if, you know, the Toronto Blue Jays, that doesn't call forth power the way these Indian names do. Does that make sense? Is that a helpful contribution at all?
Well, I understand what you're saying. I would argue that this perception of the fierce warrior is absolutely a stereotype. The reality of the history of this country is that the American Indian people were annihilated. They were the victims of virtually a genocide. They went from some estimates 10, 12, 13 million people to less than 500,000 people. So I think it's a stereotype to say they're these fierce warriors. These were people who were almost completely wiped off the face of the earth.
But they were. I mean, in Ambrose's book about Lewis and Clark, he talks about how they were fierce warriors. I'm not saying Americans, are we fierce warriors? Look at, we have the U.S. Marines. We have that as a capability of our country, mm-hmm. but we're not fierce warriors. I do see your point that we don't want to trivialize the fact that they were annihilated. And I think that this kind of imagery can do that, but I don't think because we say the Indians were fierce warriors, we stereotype the whole Indian civilization as warrior-like people. I don't know that that's true.
Well, again, yes, I see your point, but I can tell you that through their organizations, every single National American Indian organization, every one, every national organization, every tribe who has ever taken a vote on this, everyone has said they don't want these things used anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're telling us is we simply don't want to be characterized this way anymore,
yeah.
for better or for worse.
That's
and,
okay.
And I agree with you when we look at these symbols and how they began. They all began, for the most part, very innocently. And certainly that's true of the one here at the University of Illinois. No harm or no offense when this began was ever intended.
Yeah, because as warriors, not only were they good, but they were right. They should have been fighting fiercely,
sure,
for their country.
But what the American Indian people are telling us now is, we don't want you to do this,
yeah,
anymore. We understand that maybe, you know, you feel a certain way. We would like you to stop doing this. Then what happens is places such as, say, the University of Illinois, say, the Washington Redskins, they say, forget it. We don't want to hear you anymore. If you don't like it, go away.
Mm-hmm.
Then that sort of changes everything.
I agree.
Then you can't say it's innocent, yeah, or harmless anymore.
Yeah.
Once you've been confronted and you still refuse, and say here at the University of Illinois, you say, well, we're honoring you, and if you don't like that, you can,
yeah,
leave. Well, what kind of honor is that?
Sure. Sure, I agree. And I vote for Bears, and we wouldn't even have to change color. Look, it's all the same color.
The fact is, you bring up another point in that a lot of people think that American Indians are asking, say, the University of Illinois to completely stop even using the name.
Yeah.
And for the most part, what I've heard is there isn't a lot of issue with the names as long as you stop having connections to American Indian symbols, culture, or anything like,
yeah,
that. And one university that modeled perfectly how that can be done is Bradley University, who continues to use the name Braves, which they were always the Braves, but no longer uses any American Indian symbols or anything in either their mascots or any of their imagery.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sounds good.
Thank you for the call.
All right, bye-bye.
We're talking this morning with Jay Rosenstein, independent documentary producer, whose recent work is In Whose Honor, a documentary airing on PBS and our own Channel 12, July 15th, 8 o'clock in the evening. And we're talking about the Chief Illiniwek controversy. We have a couple callers, would welcome others. The number 333-9455, that's the Champaign Urbana number. Toll free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Jay, I wanted to sort of get at a point that Charlene Teeters and others make in your piece about the importance of symbols and the religious significance of those symbols, because it seems that might be one issue that isn't being squarely confronted by, mm-hmm, those, you know, and I'm not trying to advocate or knock any particular point of view, but the eagle feather, for example.
Oh, yeah.
When Chief, you know, she describes seeing Chief Alano for the first time, she thought he was, before then, she thought he was some kind of cartoon character, that it would just be this goofy guy in a big, you know, hat or something.
Right.
But he comes out with a full headdress of eagle feathers, and that shocked her.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, again, you know, I'm not an American Indian, so I'm only going to tell you what I've heard from other American Indians. I'm certainly not a spokesperson for the race, and I don't claim to be. But my understanding is the eagle feather is one of the most, is probably the most sacred symbol that they have. The offense that she had, my understanding again to the headdress, is this. American Indian people who worship in the traditional ways, you acquire eagle feathers through doing various acts of bravery or honor or things like that. It's something that's very important, very sacred. And when a person has acquired a headdress, a full feather headdress like the one that Chief Illiniwek wears, that can only be acquired through a lifetime of leadership and service to their community. And no one else would sort of pick up that headdress and wear it for fun. That's absolutely forbidden. You would never wear eagle feathers unless you were the person who had earned that headdress. And so the analogy that I've heard is to the Army, for instance. If you're in the Army, you don't pick up a general's uniform and put it on and walk around, say, on Halloween or for any other reason. You don't dare wear a uniform that you haven't earned the right to wear, say, in the Army. That's the same thing with American Indians in that worship in the traditional ways. And again, this is information from Charlene, that nobody would dare wear a headdress like that unless they had earned it. And that was one of the things that was so offensive to her, and still is, about Chief Illiniwek, that this would just be a person, and you'd put on this thing, again, like a private in the Army dressing up in a general's uniform. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they put you in jail for that, don't they, impersonating an officer?
Well, I've never tried, so I don't know. But, okay. Well, we have several callers, so let's go on and talk with our next caller, line number one in Champaign. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning, Jay. Appreciate your comments. In some way, you've sort of said what I was going to say. I was calling in response to the gentleman on the Fierce Warriors. We missed the whole point, I think, when we say that we're honoring a group of people as fierce warriors, and that group of people themselves are saying, we're not just warriors. We're a people who had an entire culture, a culture that had religious value, spiritual value, that was about raising children and families and nurturing the earth. And not to romanticize that culture, but it was a very diverse, broad culture that had a lot of aspects about it. And the only reason that we hang on to the imagery of the fierce warrior is that we had a people whose back were up against the wall, mm-hmm. who fought to resist being annihilated. That's not an imagery I want associated with my sports teams. That would be akin to saying, well, we're going to use the Jewish people as a symbol for our basketball teams because they were so resistant to the Nazis in World War II. We just wouldn't even think of doing it, and it's as simple as that. Thank you for your time.
Well, thanks for calling.
Well, I don't know if you have any comments on the caller.
I agree with him, and again, from what I've heard from American Indian people, it's the same issue again. You know, the issue of stereotyping, and he brought up another issue again, which is we wouldn't do this to any other race. And in fact, that is the definition of racism when you get right down to it. When you do something to a race which you wouldn't do to any other race at all. I should mention that the earlier caller who had brought up the idea of where these things got started and all that, it's been the last American Indian nickname or mascot in major professional sports. The last time that happened was 1963, which was the Kansas City Chiefs. So it's been 34 years now since a major professional team has ever thought about taking a name like that. Within those 34 years, there have been a lot of other professional teams that have come onto the scene. None of them have ever and then been named after Native Americans. And why is that? And I think the answer is, we know now that it's not an appropriate thing to do. I would not expect there ever to be another new team ever named after a Native American. And that's, again, been proven out in pro sports. And I think it's because times change. And things change and people change. And what might have seemed like an okay thing to do back in 1926, say when the University of Illinois began this, is not okay now, in the same way that blackface is no longer okay, in the same way that separate drinking fountains for whites and blacks are not okay. We evolve as a culture, we learn more about each other, and we learn to respect each other by listening to each other and not doing those things.
Okay. During this hour of Focus 580, the remaining 20 minutes or so, we're talking with Jay Rosenstein, independent documentary producer, whose recent work is In Whose Honor, a look at the Chief Illiniwek controversy here on the campus of the University of Illinois, and some of the larger issues that that documentary deals with. And that will be airing on July 15th on public television across the United States, including Channel 12 here at 8 o'clock. On July 15th.
I believe it's 8 o'clock.
Okay. So you'll have a chance to see that then. Our lines are all full, so let's go ahead and talk with some more callers. And next up would be line number 3 in Champaign. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning. I'm glad that the last caller straightened out a few things that was said by the previous callers. I'm glad to hear that this topic is being discussed, but I must admit it's often difficult for me to listen to because for instance, the second caller and the ignorance of so many Americans on what actually happened to Native Americans, the indigenous people, by settlers that came from Europe, near extermination of an entire race of people. But especially this idea, as the third caller pointed out, that, you know, is a very complex culture. They're just simply not one thing, i.e. fierce warriors. And I believe, but please correct me if I'm wrong, that the Illini tribe itself was not a warrior tribe. It was a sedentary tribe. It farmed and was involved in agriculture. They were not warlike. They were not Apaches, for instance. Mm-hmm. So listening to those types of individuals annoys the you know what out of me. But even more so was the first caller and the hypocrisy of that woman, that she can, yes, write a letter and so forth, but she still goes to the football or basketball games, I believe, with her husband. And when the chief comes out, she simply leaves the arena. But then she goes to the concession stand and spends her money there. So she buys the ticket and supports the chief by purchasing that ticket. She puts money into the concession stand, etc. Well, if her heart is really in the right place, she should boycott altogether, as should all people who are against the chief. If all you have to do is look around the world, South Africa, the how economic sanctions help bring down the apartheid regime, the civil rights movement in the United States, how the black community used its economic might to bring about change in Jim Crow laws in the South, etc. That's what needs to be done in this community. People who are sincerely against the chief should not be going to these games, and should, they don't necessarily have to picket and boycott out in front, but don't put your money into something that you're against. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Well, what do you think? I mean, should people drop out of the university? I mean, how far do you take that?
Well, he had an interesting point, and certainly, economics, you know, it's funny. He brought up the issue of economics, and it is a very important one. And economics is one way that people can sort of try to exert themselves. And I think what he's done is he's actually absolutely identified what it is about this issue that's kept Chief Illiniwek here for so long, and that is the same kind of threats, the same kind of economic threats by people who perhaps give money to the university. So, you know, ultimately that cuts both ways, and I agree with what he has to say. On the other hand, I'm not so sure that that's necessarily going to be the most effective thing. The reason why is you don't make moral decisions based on money, or at least you shouldn't. Unfortunately, what Chief Illiniwek is, in some ways, is a symptom of a greater problem, with certainly at the college level, with universities all over the country, and that is the issue of the university being for sale. and say Nike wants to give you X millions of dollars to put their symbol on the uniforms, then they do that. Well, how far does that go? How far does Nike's influence go? What if Nike says, we want you to change from a cartoon image of an American Indian to a cartoon image of an African American man? Then would they be able to dictate that? That sort of thing. I think the problem, though, with the economic thing, again, is that's used so often as a threat and a justification to keep Chief Illini Wick. You know, the fact is there is no evidence to show or to suggest that anything would happen financially to this university if Chief Illini Wick were eliminated or the symbol was changed in any ways. So a lot of times I think that that, too, is an empty threat. And if you look at all the other universities that have gotten rid of their Indian symbols, Stanford, Dartmouth, Oklahoma, Syracuse, Bradley, Marquette, I mean, the list goes on and on. None of them went broke. Stanford University is doing just fine financially. They suffered from the same kind of threats from people. We're not going to give money, et cetera, et cetera. Well, where are they now? They're doing just fine. In fact, the president's daughter wants to go there. Dartmouth University. You know, I think that those economic threats on the other side are taken too seriously because there is no evidence to suggest that a person gives $40 million to a University of Illinois just because of the halftime entertainment at a football game.
We have several callers. I don't want to make them wait too long, but there was a very interesting scene in your documentary. Was it at Super Bowl, or what was it? It was one of the Atlanta games or something, where there's this big African-American gentleman dressed in full Indian regalia, and he's obviously a big fan of the team.
Right, it's the Washington Redskins.
Washington Redskins, yeah. Okay. And here's this very large black man dressed as an Indian, and he is out to have a great time at this game, and he runs into Charlene Teeters, and he's saying to her, you know, I understand your point of view. We don't mean to disrespect you. It's not, you know, I don't mean any disrespect. I'm paraphrasing him. But it's about money.
Yeah.
And he says, and you know it is.
Yeah.
And it's about marketing. It seems to me the subtext of this is that it really is about, you know, an image that will promote the most effectively. And I think an earlier caller said the same thing earlier. You want an image that conveys strength or, you know, fighting or something like that, something that is immediately identifiable and that says what, you know, you want to say. And so the symbol is appropriate for that.
Yeah.
That kind of goes along with you know, the whole idea of you know, putting forth a strong image.
But I would ask, how is a symbol that is insulting and harmful to a group of people, how is that positive? See, that's something that I certainly can't understand. How can you see that as positive when there are so many other ways you could convey your image without hurting other people, without hurting a minority group?
Okay. Well, let's go on and talk with some of the callers. I don't want to make people wait too long. We'll go next to line number 2 in Champaign. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. Thanks. I just wanted to bring up something about, you know, similar to what you've been saying about schools that have been changing their name. I went to graduate school at Miami of Ohio, and for years their name was the Miami Redskins.
Right.
And there's always, you know, a similar kind of controversy about whether they should change their name. And the Board of Trustees had always said that, well, so long as it's honoring, you know, the Native Americans who lived in that area, and they always said that they had the, you know, the okay from the Miami tribe in Oklahoma. But last year, the Miami tribe voted that they no longer felt that that name honored them in the way that they had, you know, basically said that it had before. And this year, Miami dropped that name, and they're picking up a new name. They're going to be the Red Hawks from now on. But, you know, it only took them a year to really, you know, just say, okay, they don't want it. We're changing it. And, you know, I think that that's just that, you know, some schools, they're willing to say that, you know, if you don't like that, we'll change it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that that's something that people should think about here in, you know, in Champaign, that if it's not something that's honoring the group and the group says that, that they should consider that as well.
Well, that's certainly true what he said about the University of Miami, or actually it's Miami of Ohio, I think is the proper name, right?
Right.
They did do away with it, and a lot of people were surprised at how quickly that happened. I think one of the issues that you brought up is the fact that people like Charlene Teeters are going around the country not only educating non-Indian people about this issue and about the effects of these stereotypes, she's also educating her own people as well. And And some American Indian groups say that aren't very affected by these things, who don't have much contact with them, perhaps don't know. And we've seen that in a lot of areas. And perhaps, I don't know the details of the Miami situation. Again, I was very surprised when that happened. But that could be another example, that American Indians more and more are learning about what the effects of these things are. And perhaps, you know, people like Charlene Teeters are out there trying to educate their own community, too. And that's something that I tried to make clear in the documentary, that she's out there, you know, working on this and talking to all kinds of people, including her own, and showing how American Indian responses to this have grown the same way that they've grown with you know, non-Indian people as well. You also brought up the point about the group, and that's kind of a sticky issue. You know, here at the University of Illinois, you say that you have this mascot that is an Illini Indian. In fact, what you have is you have, well, first of all, you have a white kid who is wearing a Sioux costume and then painting himself in some sort of imitative way of what they think an Indian would... Obviously, there's nothing about the paint that has anything to do with American Indians. So, you know, exactly who is the representative group there? You know, to have a person wearing a Sioux costume and calling him an Illini Indian would be like saying, having a person from Spain and saying, oh, they're German. You know, each one of these tribes is an independent nation. And so... a lot of times I think it's impossible to just pinpoint one group and say, well, if this group doesn't mind, then it should be okay. Well, it's not. It's stereotyping all American Indians, and it affects all American Indians, regardless of what specific tribe you're from. And so, you know, I have problems with those kind of arguments, too. It would be the same as if there was a, for instance, there's a civil rights complaint with the Unit 4 school district. Here in Champaign, made by a group of African Americans here. Well, what if one of them is King School, named after Martin Luther King? So you say, well, we'll go ask Martin Luther King's distant, you know, grandchild if they have a problem with what's happening in Champaign. So you find this person, and maybe he lives in Oklahoma. He's never been here, and you say, oh, do you have a problem with it? He says, no. And then you say, well, there's no problems here because this one African-American man who's not from this community, has nothing to do with this area, he says it's okay. Well, what happens when you do that? You discount all the African-Americans that live here. Same thing with Chief Illiniwek. The American Indian people who have gone to school here have said in virtual unanimity, stop doing this. This is hurting us when we're here. And same with the American Indian people in the state of Illinois. So those are the people we need to listen to, not maybe somebody who is a distant relative in somewhere in Oklahoma who knows nothing about what this community is like.
Is that your point, caller?
Yes, thanks.
Okay, thank you for the call. We have just about 8 minutes left with Jay Rosenstein, independent documentary producer. His recent documentary, In Whose Honor, airing July 15th on PBS. And we're examining the Chief Illiniwek controversy, which his documentary deals with. We have two people waiting, and we'll go right on next to line number 4 in Ottawa. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Thank you. A little bit earlier, you mentioned that no minority group has been treated as badly as the Indians in America. And I object to that because there are about 6 million Arabs in our country, Arab Americans, who have been treated terribly by the media, all through America for years. They've been called terrorists, all of them, and worse yet, they've been picked up at airports and made to go through all kinds of insulting things just because they appeared to be Arab. So I think that it would do you very much good if you would do something on that subject and assure people in America that the Arab population is just as American as all of the rest of us who may be of Jewish or of Norwegian or of any other culture. Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Well, it looks like I've got my next topic for my next documentary.
Okay. Well, appreciate the remarks of the caller.
It's tough being a minority anywhere.
Mm. Okay, we'll go on next to a caller in Urbana on line number 1. Good morning, you're on Focus 580.
Hi, thanks. I'm a university alum and a former season ticket holder in football and basketball. I would like to relate the personal experience that I think speaks to this, and it's something that when I've told it to friends and so forth has had an effect on their attitude on this subject. In 1970, I worked for a social service agency that worked on and around the Navajo Reservation in New Mexico and Arizona. During that time, I also had the interesting experience of spending a couple of days at a boarding school. And I find that, that very few people know about this phenomenon. This was, again, 1970. The Navajo children were picked up on Monday morning by a bus sent out by the U.S. government, and they were taken to this school for the week, starting in the first grade and through high school. They were taken there for the week and hauled home again on Friday night. If their parents didn't like it, they had no choice about this. There was no school board to run for and complain to. At this school, this is what I witnessed with my own eyes. They were not allowed to be Indians. Their language was not used at the school. Their culture was not talked about at the school. Certainly no spiritual life was exercised there. They were basically being taught to be mainstream Americans. Mm-hmm. And somebody apparently thought this was a solution to a problem. I have to put myself in their shoes and think, well, if I had gone through this experience, if I had been taken out of my home at an early age through the week and put in this institution and told that my culture was unfit for discussion, and then let's say I did well enough in that school to qualify to go to a place like the University of Illinois for college, and I get here, and I go to a football game, and there's a white guy dressed up like an Indian dancing on the field, and they say, oh, well, here at this educational institution, we do celebrate your culture, and that's how we do it. It seems to me that of all the places that there ought to be sensitivity towards this issue, it ought to be on a college campus.
Well, I think, yes, the issue of boarding schools is one. It's another issue of which there are many that in fact, this issue is tied up with. I'm glad you brought that up. You know, again, that's another issue that is a real black mark on the history of the United States, the whole issue of boarding schools and exactly what that caller said, American Indian children being taken from their homes, not voluntarily, being forced to go to these schools, et cetera. I think the whole rise of the American Indian movement, the creation of that activist organization in the early 1970s was in part a reaction to that. These were urban American Indians who had lost their culture, and perhaps many of them or their parents had been taken to boarding schools with the expressed idea of stripping them from their losing their Indianness, taking the Indian, you know, making a man out of them is what they I think mm-hmm. they'd say, mm-hmm. you know, take the savage out and make them into a man. Mm-hmm. And so I think that also helped foster a lot of the activism that we saw in the early 70s from American Indians wanting to reclaim their culture, wanting to reclaim their spiritual culture, their religious culture. And again, this movement against American Indian mascots is tied in with that as well. Mm-hmm. The same sort of movement. We want our stuff back. We want our culture back. It's ours. We want to reclaim it.
Well, let me ask you this. I think, you know, most people on whatever side of this issue would acknowledge that certainly, you know, many abuses were perpetrated against Native Americans. And, you know, genocide, perhaps not too strong a word to use. At the same time, you know, supporters of Chief Illiniwek would argue that, you know, first of all, if you eliminate the chief, you pretty much do away with a symbol of honor and respect. I mean, it's presented in a way that isn't a caricature. It's not a cartoon symbol. It's something that, and I believe one of the trustees was quoted in your piece as saying that the chief serves to help us remember and honor. And isn't that a good thing?
Well, it would be a good thing, except the people who you say you're honoring have told you in no uncertain terms that this is no honor. And so the way we honor them is you have to take their word for it. You have to listen to them. And so I think it's very destructive to get, and very disrespectful, really, to get in an argument with them over how they should feel. And that's what we see here all the time. We're honoring you. You should be honored. Well, it's not something to be argued about. They're telling you in no uncertain terms, this is American Indian people, this is no honor. Don't do this. We're asking you not to do this. So the way you would honor American Indian people is to listen to them. That's how you respect someone. And that's what they're asking for on this. And I think it makes perfect sense.
Okay. We're at the point where we're going to have to stop, and I'm sorry to say there's one caller here that we won't be able to talk with. I can just suggest that we'll probably be taking this topic up again in the future, and we'll have a chance to talk some more. And Jay Rosenstein, wanted to say thanks, and also give you a chance to plug your documentary again. It's airing. When is it coming up this summer?
It'll be on nationally, so you can also mention to your friends and family who live in other areas. July 15th, and you'll have to check your local listings. I think it's the regular time is it will be 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, although I believe that WILL here locally is going to air it an hour earlier at 8 p.m.
And that's the Point of View series, POV
yes.
series of
yes.
documentaries on PBS.
Yes,
okay.
Correct.
Very good. We'll have to leave it there. And, Jay, thanks very much.
Thanks, Jack.